Hello and welcome to Debt Wired. Today we'll be discussing the rise of the non-performing loan market in the Middle East. To discuss this, we'll be joined by Ahmed Alanani, the co-founder and CEO of Sancta Capital, and an alternative investment manager focused on deep value and special situations in the Middle East and North Africa. Ahmed has 20 years' experience in distressed investing, asset securitization, and structured lending. Prior to founding Sancta Capital, he held various senior roles at Exotix Capital, MD SaaS Investors, and RBC. Ahmed holds a Master's in Financial Engineering from the Stevens Institute and a Bachelor's of Science in Mathematics from the University of British Columbia. He is also a Chartered Financial Analyst charterholder. Ahmed, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Alex. First of all, it's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for giving me this forum.
So I wanted to get your perspective on the rise of the non-performing loan market in the Middle East. I mean, from the media perspective, we've seen a lot of big headlines, particularly around Davidson and Kempner picking up a NPL portfolio from Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank, a portfolio of around $1 billion. We've also seen Davidson and Kempner pick up debt on the secondary market with Al Atifex Steel, which they bought from HSBC. And we've also seen, you know, the influx of new asset managers in the market, such as the Grant Thornton Asset Recovery Fund. So I wanted to get your perspective as somebody on the ground. Have we necessarily seen a takeoff in the NPL market, or is it just simply hotter?
I think there has been a lot of interest and hype around distressed and NPL in the Middle East over the last year, I would say. You know, the situations that you started off with certainly been the cause or the driver for this interest. You know, I've been doing Middle East for 13 of my 20-year career so far. 13 years of my 20-year career so far. And despite all these developments, I think on the NPL side of things, when it comes to NPL portfolios, I think the market still remains in a very nascent stage. And the ADCB transaction, DK's purchase of the portfolio, the Grant Thornton Group, that was set up. These are all, in a way, kind of a red herring, because I think that portfolio sale was the outcome of what I view as a very unhappy marriage between Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank, UNB, Union National Bank, and Al Hilal, which then produced this massive NPL portfolio that ADCB, which was a surviving entity out of that merger, needed to find a solution for. And that's what prompted that transaction. I think we're still a little far away from seeing other banks jump in the bandwagon and start to dump their NPL portfolios. And there is a number of reasons, which I'm happy to kind of expand on, but primarily is because I think provisioning practices amongst the banks differ across the region and within specific countries as well, depending on the size of the bank, the shareholding structure, the liquidity profile, and the capitalization. And then I also think the legislative infrastructure, even though there's been a lot of legislative reform around insolvency, bankruptcies, et cetera, I actually think the infrastructure to support post-acquisition recoveries still remains very much in the test stage. And then, you know, from a regulatory standpoint, I think regulators across the region, by that I mean banking regulators, they're not uniform in their application to treatment of bad loans. And then finally, I think, you know, in spite of those transactions that you started off with, there's still no reliable servicing platform or culture to encourage banks to embark on these secondary sales. I think progress is being made, but we're still a little bit far from, you know, saying this market is about to take off.
And if the banks were sort of forced to provision more through higher regulation, do you think that would increase the number of NPLs that are being sold in the market, or do you think that wouldn't have much of an impact?
I think if the banks were forced to provision more aggressively, for instance, Saudi's, you know, SEMA is very strict with it when it comes to provisions. But like, you know, what I've noticed over the last 13 years is that when there is a systemic NPL that emerges, there's always forbearance that gets given to the banks, right? Because regulators seem hell-bent on avoiding any sort of banking crisis or bank failures, right? So I think if there is kind of, you know, more strict application by the regulators when it comes to, you know, provisioning, I think the natural outcome of that will be more consolidation in the banking sector, because, you know, we are overbanked in the Middle East, in the GCC specifically. I think that would be something that would need to happen first. And there's a variety of reasons why, you know, banks aren't merging and there isn't consolidation, which I won't get into, but that would be the natural outcome for more provisioning. And then from there, we might see more of the ADCB type transactions. There are vested interests that are currently preventing that from happening.
I see. Okay. And do you think the lack of big restructurings at the moment has played a role in the fact that you're saying that there's not many NPLs being sold? It's been quite some time since we've seen deals in magnitude of, you know, Ahab or NMC Health or Emirates REIT. Does that play a role or is that less significant?
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that statement, frankly, because I think NPL formation has relatively been not steady, but I would say range bound. It's kind of been in the 1-3, 1-4% across the banking sector in the region. And there is a multitude of sizable zombie mid-market restructurings that haven't featured in the global headlines like NMC or Ahab or Emirates REIT. And those tend to be either bilateral or club deals, mostly to, you know, name lending type situations to, you know, sizable private sector players that are concentrated amongst the local banks themselves. And that's why, you know, they end up, they stay zombied in that sense, because the banks, you know, don't have an interest in publicizing their bad loans, right? So there's enough to do in that space if there is a genuine willingness on the banks to offload that risk. In my view, the main constraint to seeing those zombie loans come out to the market is actually what the decision-making paradigm inside those banks, right? Because in most cases, I'm trying to find a way to say this diplomatically, but there are people or that with vested interests in maintaining those zombie loans on the bank balance sheets. For them, you know, these workouts take time, and those vested interests are motivated to keep those loans on the bank's balance sheet, so that, in so many words, they have something to do. And that's what prevents price discovery when it comes to these zombie loans. I've been in many situations where, you know, we will get approached by one bank who's a minority part of a club deal to a local corporate. And, you know, they don't have a voice in the process, and this particular bank is motivated to exit their exposure. We will then attempt to do some form of, you know, market-based price discovery of this asset. And what we'll find is that the other banks in the club who have, you know, who are in the driving seat and have much greater influence on the situation are far less motivated to work with us in, you know, and to help us diligence these assets in order to form a view on pricing. And we don't end up dealing in those situations because, you know, the data tape isn't complete, or the information disclosure is not proper, or the governance amongst the banks as a creditor group is dysfunctional. So it's not necessarily that there isn't enough to do. There's actually plenty to do. It's just that the culture doesn't encourage price discovery, as I mentioned.
I see. Okay. And in terms of, from a sort of distressed investor perspective, I mean, if there isn't that flow of deals in terms of, you know, the sheer quantity of NPLs to get involved in, would you say that you're looking more at private credit to try and drive those returns? And that's certainly something that we've looked at DebtWire, where we've been polling the market and a lot of investors have started to turn to private credit. Is that something that you guys have been looking at as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would say probably since the last oil collapse, kind of around 2015, and then that, you know, the ensuing SME crisis in the UAE, especially, we haven't really, and you know, the high profile situations like NMC, et cetera, we haven't really dedicated much time to distressed in debt situations in the region. There has been some, you know, like I mentioned, NMC, Emirates, there has been some localized situations where we've worked on, and it was, you know, within a short time frame and clear kind of events and timeline to work off. But generally, we've stayed away from distress for the reasons I discussed earlier. So that then kind of opened up the door for us to get more involved on private credit. And the reason for that is part of the dysfunction of regional banking and the capital markets landscape is that there's a large swath of the borrowers that are effectively shut out the bank funding market and don't have access to debt capital markets. And that opens a gap for a fund like us that, like ours, that has the flexibility to provide kind of alternative funding solutions. With that, where we see the dislocation is, we've lent to companies, for instance, that are asset light in nature, tech based, or companies that do a lot of cross-border within the region, cross-border business. Those companies are typically shut out of bank funding market because, banks either want to do the plain vanilla kind of working capital funding, or they want to do secured lending. Otherwise, they're not motivated to lend to these companies because, frankly, they're too busy lending to government-related entities and infrastructure projects. So, the banks have a captive customer that they can always go to and lend to. So they haven't faced the pressure to go down the scale to start lending again to middle market and small caps. And that opens up an opportunity for us. The second area of interest is also around kind of what we call growth debt or venture debt. We've seen over the last decade a number of startups that have gone through their seed funding Series A, Series B, and have managed to commercialize and scale up and do well in the region. And those companies, again, they're not big enough to come to capital markets, and there isn't that deep of a pool of venture debt providers in the region like other developed markets is, and they certainly don't qualify for bank funding. But the founders of those businesses are at a stage where they can't just, keep diluting themselves. So they're looking for alternative capital providers. And frankly, the ecosystem is very small. So they come to us and we're able to kind of work with those companies where effectively we're providing them structured equity or structured debt with some equity participation for us that is less dilutive for them, but allows them to continue the scale up and the commercialization and achieve operational profitability until the stage where they become eligible for bank financing and they can take us out. I would say for the last 5 years, that's really where we've spent the bulk of our attention and where a lot of our capital for towards credit has gone.
I see. Okay. And would you say that there's enough of those deals to keep you busy? I mean, we've written about transactions such as the Stars Play transaction and Move Africa that use private credit in the region. Would you say there's enough of those to keep you busy, or they're few and far between?
More than enough, I would say, and increasingly more so of in the last year. In fact, we've done, on the growth debt, venture debt side of things, we've done Pure Harvest, which was a very high profile transaction that we did with Franklin Templeton during COVID. And then we are now working on another transaction in the renewables/power, temporary power sector. I would say the issue is less about deal flow. The issue is more about size of the deals. For a fund of our size, I think, we kind of like to be in the range of $25 to $50 million tickets. And we're not seeing enough borrowers that have that kind of capital requirement. There's a lot of deals that are kind of in the $10 to $25 million range. And, these are companies that could become candidates for, bigger type funding as they continue to scale up and grow. But we're trying to stay in the $25 to $50 million range. And that's where, that makes the selection criteria a little bit more challenging for us. But deal flow, by definition, plenty of it. Because as I mentioned, there's been a slew of companies that have over the last year, the last decade, especially over the last 5 years, that have gone through their various rounds of equity funding and are no longer looking for dilution and they need, alternative funding solutions.
I see. Okay. And in terms of the number of hedge funds that we've seen set up in the Middle East, particularly Abu Dhabi, are you seeing a lot of competition from them in the sorts of deals that you're looking at, particularly on the credit side? Or are they typically more focused on equity investments?
Let's say I'm not rubbing many shoulders with new entrants in the credit space in the region. I think a lot of these funds are, I'm following the headlines and with the same level of excitement because you know, frankly, I think we can use a little bit of ecosystem building in the region. Today, if I was to really name who are the credit funds in the market providing capital, be it in distressed or turnaround situations or on the private growth debt type situation, I think it really, you know, can be numbered on less than 10. So I think a lot of these funds that are coming to market are either, you know, setting up here for tax efficiency or to access different pools of capital, Abu Dhabi being one, or maybe to look at other regions from while being based in Dubai for whatever reasons. I don't think a lot of these funds are allocating capital to the region per se. That may be changing. We're seeing some signs of that, but I think some signs of that. But some of the names, you know, that have recently come to the region have started looking at the region, which is encouraging. But I think they're facing the same issues that we're facing, which is scale, ticket sizes. That may be an issue of concern if we start competing with people for, you know, the sizable tickets, and then we start diluting our underwriting standards. But I think we're not quite there just yet.
Got you. Okay. Well, thanks, Ahmed, for your time, and that's all we've got time for.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you for our audience for listening to DebtWired. Please like, comment, and share.